All right. Hi, you guys. This is Maria Ripo. I'm not sure if you got Brittany's email, but she was unable to make the call today. So Brittany and I work together. I am her resident nutrition expert, and I haven't gotten to actually do a call for this series yet. So I was really excited for this opportunity. Again, my name is Maria Ripo, and in case you're not familiar with who I am or what I do, I am a certified holistic lifestyle transformation coach. I'm 43 years old and I've been married for 19 years. I have four kids from ages 16 all the way down to 8. And I have practiced and studied natural health for about, gosh, 25 years. It doesn't even seem possible. I have walked the diet journey. I've done every imaginable way of eating. I've been overweight, I've been underweight, I've been totally food obsessed. And in my research, and most importantly, my own journey of finding balance in my weight and in my relationship with food, what I found out is that if we're going to be at our healthiest weight for ourselves, there are a few things that all of us need to do. And that being said, I'm going to talk a little bit about how there really isn't one diet that's going to work for every person all the time, which is part of the reason why it is so completely confusing. And people seem to be more confused than ever about how to actually eat to be healthy, to release weight, to avoid disease, and all of those kinds of things. So, when Brittany asked me to speak a couple hours ago, I thought, there's so many things I could talk about. But what I wanted to do, I'm not quite sure like where you guys are as far as your eating journey and what your diet looks like and stuff like that. But I wanted to talk about the six foundational principles of health. And before I start talking, I want to apologize in advance. I literally am sucking in pollen in the Pacific Northwest. The pollen is insane, and because of that, my throat is getting kind of scratchy when I talk, so I'm going to do the best I can as far as that goes. So bear with me. Basically, the six foundational principles of health are representative of the ancient wisdoms that have been really passed down from generation to generation of healthy communities around the world. I would not put our culture in that healthy community grouping, as we are all witness to the fact that we have friends and loved ones constantly being diagnosed with diseases, it seems like. So basically, these six foundational principles are the bedrock of a fulfilling, happy life full of vitality and energy. So I'm going to first talk about the six foundational principles of health, and then I'm going to go a little bit into diet. And at the end, I'm going to dive a little deeper into diet than the other principles. But I want to touch on each of the principles. I have Brittany just texting me, so I'm just sorry. I'm gonna text her back really quick. One sec. Sorry about that. Okay. So the first one, and this is so applicable to what you're doing here with Brittany on these coaching calls and what I do with my clients. I never just teach my clients about physical health, because I really believe that we can't have physical health if we don't also have emotional health. So the first principle is being mindful of your thoughts. Really, the first thing that we do when we wake up is we think. it might not be anything profound, you know, other than realizing you got to jump out of bed and run to the bathroom. But oftentimes our first thoughts that we have when we wake up will really determine our mood for the rest of the day, which is why I don't weigh myself. Because if that stupid scale has a higher number than I was thinking, man, I could really be set up for a disastrous day. So that number doesn't do anything good for me. So I don't weigh myself. I don't want to think about how much I weigh first thing in the morning. And I really don't want my focus to be there. But this in turn can really have a serious impact on the quality of the decisions that we make throughout the day, the choices that we make. For example, if I step on the scale and the number is high, I might just figure, well, I must be doing a crappy job of eating, and so I might as well eat everything I want. And then I feel terrible. So that's one thing I don't know. But anyway, the work that you're doing with Brittany, you're really learning how to change your thoughts and therefore change your experience of life. And that's really, really important and essential for true health. So the second thing is breathing. And we all breathe. It's something we do without even thinking about it, but oftentimes we breathe really short breaths. We really should only have about 8 to 10 breaths per minute. And sometimes people have, you know, twice as many or three times as many as that. And what that can affect is blood sugar, blood pressure, stress levels, overall health. It can affect so many areas of our life. And so, if we're breathing short breaths, it's really showing that we're in a fight or flight stress pattern. And if we're in a fight or flight stress pattern, that does all kinds of things to has a negative impact on our health. And so what you're doing by learning to think your thoughts differently and breathe deeply and relax is you're reducing that fight or flight stress pattern, which is going to help your body to release weight. It's going to help you sleep better. It's going to help your heart health. It's basically going to overall help you live longer. So we want to do that. So what I thought I would do is just go over a little bit. This is the second principle of health, breathing. And I wanted to talk a little bit because this is such a simple thing that everyone can do that can really have a profound effect on your body. And literally, you could do this for 5 minutes a day. If you did this for 5 minutes a day, it would have an incredible effect on your health. So, the actual simple act of deep breathing can solve a lot of your health problems. And I know that sounds crazy and probably not even believable, but there's a big difference between our regular breathing and then deep breathing. Regular breathing actually just kind of happens in the lungs and the chest, whereas deep breathing involves learning to slow breathing and use the diaphragm, learning to open up the diaphragm and relax the stomach muscles where we hold a lot of our stress, and it helps us actually release some of that stress. Even in EFT, I know often, you know, we'll say, okay, now take a deep breath. And oftentimes I listen for people to yawn or just take a natural deep breath because I know that that means they're having an emotional release. So, deep breathing lets your body take in more oxygen and then it lets it release more carbon dioxide. So, what this can lead to is lower blood pressure, like I said, slower heart rate, muscle and bowel relaxation. So, the bowel relaxation is really important because it can help you release more substance out of your bowels and toxins come out with that. So that's really important. Reduced nervousness and insomnia, increased circulation, lower blood sugar, reduced stress, and overall longer lifespan. So once you actually implement a daily routine of deep breathing, you will start reaping those benefits right away. So that's a really cool thing. Deep breathing is profound. And yet, it doesn't take that much time. You don't have to make a major lifestyle switch or anything like that. So, How do we practice deep breathing? Well, to do this effectively, you want to take a long, deep breath inhaled through your nose. And what I like to do, if you can do this lying down, you can, or even sitting up straight, pretend that there's maybe a string, you know, pulling up your head to the sky, and just sit up real straight, be comfortable, and put one hand on your chest and one hand on your abdomen. So if you're taking a deep breath, you might feel your chest expand, and that's a normal deep breath. But what we want to do is we want to move the breath farther down through the diaphragm, even into the abdomen, and act as though your abdomen is a balloon and you're trying to blow up the balloon with your breath. And you want to always inhale through your nose, and then you can exhale through your mouth or through your nose. So you can try that a few times, just inhaling slowly through your nose, and then witnessing your abdomen actually rise, and then your chest after your abdomen. And then hold the breath just for an amount of time that feels comfortable, and then slowly exhale through your mouth, feeling your hands come back down. And you can do that just like 6 to 10 times, maybe before you go to sleep. If you want to do it a little bit more in depth, like let's say you have insomnia or you have high blood pressure, a lot of stress, nervousness, anxiety, you might want to do something a little bit more in depth. So what I would say is to lie flat on your back with your arms resting at your side. Keep the palms turned up. In yoga, this is called Savasana. It's the relaxation position that we do after a yoga class. And you want to just inhale slowly and deeply, filling your abdomen like a balloon first and then your chest. And as you inhale, imagine that you're inhaling spirit and light into your feet. And feel the muscles and bones and skin become permeated with the breath's energy until they tingle, till you just feel them with tingling with vitality. And hold the breath only as long as you can do so comfortably. There's no reason to hold it, you know, longer than what's comfortable. And then do the same thing for the calves and the thighs. And then moving to the hips, so you'll be just taking a breath for each area of your body, your abdomen, your stomach, your hands, then your forearms, your upper arms, your chest, your shoulders, your back and neck and throat, your jaw and tongue and facial muscles, your eyes and brain. It's always slowly and gently with really deep attention. And if you do this when you're tired or stressed or when you get in bed to go to sleep, you'll find that you'll have a much deeper sleep. You'll feel calm and relaxed and invigorated. I've actually done this with clients. Sometimes I have clients that have insomnia, and so I will have an appointment with them like at 9 or 10 at night, tell them to get their PJs on and their teeth brushed and climb in bed. And I'll actually go through the whole exercise with them. They'll fall right asleep and sleep like a baby. So it's really, really effective. Okay, so the next principle is going to bed on time. I know this is a tough one for a lot of people. And it actually can involve a lifestyle shift. But in their book, Lights Out, Wiley and Formby's research has shown that a good night's sleep will actually help you lose weight, curb your cravings for refined carbohydrates, and help to eradicate depression and actually reverse type 2 diabetes. So whether you actually achieve a restful sleep is going to be determined by your state of mind. the food that you've eaten before you go to bed. If you have electromagnetic stress, such as like if you have a TV on in your room or a computer on, or even your cell phone in your bedroom, that's actually going to negatively affect your quality of sleep. So my cell phone is always off and out of my room at night. I turn off the internet, the wireless, you know, the lights. I don't have anything electronic near me or lights on even in the room can affect your sleep. They've actually done studies that even shining a light on the back of somebody's knee, I have no idea how that works, but that affects their sleep. So you want to sleep in complete darkness if that's possible. So a big reason is that this is true is that when we don't get enough sleep, it actually causes stress, which raises the stress hormone cortisol. And when cortisol is high, our body stores fat. That's because when cortisol is our fight or flight hormone. So let's say you're out in the Sahara Desert and you're being chased by a lion. The intelligence of your body raises the cortisol level. All your blood rushes away from your digestive system to the lower part of your brain, which is the instinctual brain. So it takes the blood away from the thinking and memory and intuitive spiritual part of your mind and puts it all to the instinctive part so you can run fast and think fast and survive. All the blood goes out to your extremities away from your organs, and your body stores fat because it doesn't know when is the next time you're going to sleep after this current emergency. I mean, sleep, eat after this emergency. That's how stress works. So if we want to be healthy and release weight, relieving stress, reducing stress is really, really important. The other thing about sleep is that our bodies do repair work at night. So between the hours of 10 p.m. and 2 a.m., our body does physical repair work. And then between 2 a.m. and 6 a.m., it does psychological repair work. So if we're not sleeping during these hours, that repair work is not happening. And we're literally taking years off of our life by not sleeping. It's really best to just turn off your electronics and dim your lights by about 9 o'clock at night so that your cortisol levels start going down. So by the time you climb in bed at 10, you're actually feeling tired. And this could be hard at first. If you can't fall asleep at 10, it may take a little while for your whole circadian rhythm to switch. So just go to bed and rest, close your eyes and be restful. And before you know it, your body will catch on. And you will start being able to go to sleep, especially as you start changing your diet, because this will balance your hormones, and your hormones have everything to do with your ability to fall asleep and stay asleep. So it can take some work, and I understand some people are night owls and all of that. So what I would say in this instance is do your best. We don't want to cause actually more stress about sleeping. So the other stress relieving suggestion that everyone here can do, even if you're really, really busy, is to stop eating about 3 hours before you go to bed. So it's not about weight loss. It's just about living a long, healthy, vibrant, energetic life and living your truth and being fully who you actually are and waking up feeling rested and just ready for your day. If we eat right before we go to bed, then our body will end up spending the first few hours of our sleep when it's supposed to be doing repair work and regenerating. It will be spending those hours digesting. So digestion actually takes more energy for the body than any other physiological process. So if you're digesting instead of resting, you're actually going to wake up tired. So it's one easy thing you can do to just have a lot more energy. I should say simple. It's not necessarily easy, because if you're a night eater, it won't be easy to do. It'll be something that it'll give you opportunity to do some healing work, actually. So if you feel like eating at night, that's a great time to do some tapping, call a tapping buddy, work with a coach, whatever, because you can really access parts of you that are wanting to heal by not eating at night. So, okay. Principle number four, let food be your medicine. The father of medicine, Hippocrates, actually said, let thy food be thy medicine and thy medicine thy food. And unfortunately, our huge choice of inexpensive and convenient food has put incredible pressure on commercial farmers to use harmful farming practices in order to meet all the strict standards placed on them by powerful supermarkets and government entities. And the problem with that is that these farming practices are damaging the soil that our food is grown in, which means that our fruits and vegetables even aren't as nutritious as they once were, as our grandparents and great-grandparents had. Food can be an incredibly powerful drug, and as an emotional eater, I include myself in that category. We all know that because food tends to be our drug of choice. But it can also be a powerful drug in a really good way, which is why it's important that each of us work out what diet works best for our body to give us optimal health. So basically what we need to do is figure out the combination of proteins and carbohydrates and fats that are right for our unique bodies and our well-being. And the way that you can do this is by getting a metabolic typing test done. And I actually do that. If that's something that you're interested in, you can email me and we can talk about that. My email address is maria@thegreensmoothiechallenge.com. So if anything I say, if you guys have questions or anything like that, feel free to email me. And also my website is mariaripo.com. Ripo is R-I-P-P-O, just in case you're interested in looking into what I do a little more. It's really important that we become discerning with the food businesses that we choose to give our hard-earned money to. If we can buy locally grown organic whole food in season, that's of course the best. But always my philosophy is do the best you can in that area. If you can eat organic, that's great. The Environmental Working Group actually has a list called the Clean 15 and the Dirty Dozen, where you can look up the most heavily sprayed foods that you might want to purchase organically, and then the least heavily sprayed foods that you can get away with purchasing conventionally grown, non-organic. You know, if you can eat grass-fed meats, pasture-raised eggs, basically just going back to nature and eating the foods that were here 10,000 years ago. That's kind of my health philosophy. You know, if it wasn't available even 5,000 years ago, even 1,000 years ago, or 500 years ago, 100 years ago for that matter, then it's probably not good for us. I'm going to go a little bit more into that in a little bit. But the fifth principle is hydration. There is a great book to read called Your Body's Many Cries for Water, that basically proves that dehydration is a common cause for many ailments and diseases that we're experiencing today. I actually work with a well-known professor at the University of Washington, Gerald Pollack, and we're working on getting funding for a study on this, but he's convinced, and so am I, that dehydration is actually the root of disease. And so Being hydrated is essential for good health. In order to maintain good levels of energy, concentration, and digestive function, we need to be drinking good, clean, filtered water. So tap water is full of chlorine, which is very dehydrating. It's full of lots of other things that we don't want to be eating or drinking. So if you can get filtered water, or we have an artesian well in our city that we go get free water from. It's just filtered up through the rocks. You know, you can look into your options, but that's a simple thing you can do for your health. Paul Check of the Check Institute in San Diego, California, which is where I received my training, recommends this formula that you would multiply 0.033 times your weight in kilograms, and that equals the liters of water you should drink per day. Basically, that's about equal to, let's say you weigh 130 pounds, you would want to drink half of that in ounces per day. So if that's an easier and you don't want to figure out kilograms and you live in the US, how much do you weigh? Divide it by two, and that's about how many ounces you should be drinking a day. If you struggle with getting hydrated, potentially you have an adrenal issue going on. There's also certain constitutions, like I'm a Vata constitution according to Ayurvedic medicine, and Vatas tend to be more dehydrated. So I tend to be more dehydrated. I take a product called Mega Hydrate and also a product called Crystal Energy, and those are available on Amazon. They're amazing. They will change your skin. Mega Hydrate is the ultimate, like, highest antioxidant product, mineralizing, cell mineralizing product. Basically, the Crystal Energy will open up your cells to be able to absorb the hydration and the minerals and stuff. I also drink bone broth, and I use beef gelatin in it. That is available on Amazon, the beef gelatin. You can look on my website, mariarepo.com, for a bone broth recipe. Full of minerals, very hydrating, incredibly healing for your intestinal tract, digestive system. Will also give you a lot more energy. And being hydrated gives you a much better opportunity to release weight and keep clear of disease. Okay, number six. The one that some of us don't like to hear. Exercise, movement. I would call it movement because when we think of exercise, a lot of times we think of going to the gym. But exercise can be something that you really love. You know, it can be taking a bike ride, a walk on the beach, yoga, just a 15-minute walk outside, some light rebounding on a mini trampoline, you know, getting outside with your kids and playing frisbee, going for a hike. There's all kinds of ways to move our bodies, but moving our bodies is essential to good health. Our bodies were created to move. And I had a friend, an older friend, and she always would say, move it or lose it. And I think that's true. If we don't move our body, then eventually we're going to lose our capacity to use our body to move. So we don't want that to happen. Movement is really important for digestion. It's important for moving toxins through our body. Even sweating. Sweating is really important. If you can work up a sweat, that would be great. But just getting out, swimming, anything that you enjoy. It does not have to be hard, terrible work. Even standing up. I've been standing up to work. I actually have a kitchen counter that's like a bar. And I just put my computer at the bar and stand and work instead of sitting. That's a great thing to do too. All right. So I'm going to go back to the food principle, food being your medicine. And The other principles I think are pretty self-explanatory. I don't really need to go into really deep detail about that. But when it comes to food, there is so much confusion. You know, do I need to be vegan? Am I supposed to eat raw? Do I have to be vegetarian? Do I have to be a carnivore? Am I supposed to eat fat-free or full fat or good fat or bad fat? You know, what the heck do I eat to have a body that I feel comfortable in and to feel good and keep clear of disease? I literally have done all of those diets in my time. In my 25 years, I have experimented so much, and I've studied in depth all of the principles of these diets. And what I have found to be true is that there is not one diet that fits all. We are biochemically unique. And just as we're all a unique expression of the creator, that's my belief system. No two snowflakes are the same. There are no two people that are the same. So there isn't one diet that works for everybody. Some people actually get sick on a vegetarian diet, while others can heal from cancer. What I have found is that there are certain things that we can all do to drastically improve our health, and I just want to touch on some of those things today. I know it can get really overwhelming to talk about diet. You don't need to go out and change and start doing all of this right away or anything. Just kind of put a bug in your brain. Think about these things, see which ones feel right for you, and you know what parts of these you might like to start incorporating one step at a time into your life. So here's basically the deal. If you've eaten a ton of meat all your life, you're probably going to have an acidic condition in your body. So this is when eating only vegetables for a time could be very healing for you. I actually recommend that everybody do some sort of a vegetable-only cleanse once in a while. I'm actually running a 6-week cleanse right now where I'm teaching my students first. I teach them how to eat, and we take like 5 weeks in that. And then we get all the junk out, eat an amazingly healthy diet of 80% plant-based foods and 20% animal-based foods. We learn how to do all of that properly. We get off caffeine and alcohol and all of that. And then we end it with a 10-day liquids only vegetable-based healing program for healing the body. Right now, in the springtime in the northern hemisphere, is the perfect time to cleanse the body. Basically, the winter time is a time to build. We sleep more, we eat heavier, richer foods. And then in the spring and summer, we cleanse more. For me, my diet actually changes with the seasons just naturally. I feel like heavier foods in the winter. I want those comfort foods and soups and more butter and fat. And then in the summer, when it starts getting warm, I just don't really want those. They just don't sound good anymore. I want more, you know, raw, cooling foods. I don't want to eat as much. I usually gain weight in the winter and then it just comes off in the spring and summer. And I feel like that's just a really natural process for us. So basically, vegetables are cleansing and meat is building. And our bodies are made to do both, cleanse and build. That's why, partly why it's so confusing, because we hear about this person that healed from cancer by, you know, drinking fresh juice for a year. Or, you know, we hear all these things and then we all think, oh, we all need to do that all the time to be healthy. And that's just not the case. So what we really need to do, what we need to eat really depends on our situation. Like when I was on a very alkalizing raw food diet for a couple of years, I got too alkalized and I became mineral deficient and I ended up having all kinds of problems. So adding more acidic foods and animal-based foods actually helped me heal very, very quickly. But, so I could write a book like How to Heal on Animal-Based Foods, but it would only apply to people that are in a certain situation as far as their health. So I hope that makes sense. But there's principles that all of us need to follow in order to experience good health. So as far as diet goes, I like to say that dead food makes dead people. And have you guys noticed how many, just the amount of people that are being diagnosed with all kinds of disease? And I'm always telling my kids that I just don't remember this happening when I was a child. I knew one kid in school that had leukemia. I don't feel like my parents' friends were getting diagnosed with diseases constantly, and it just seems like that's happening now. And there is really something that we can do about that. We do have some control for sure over our health. We really are what we eat. We are what we choose to put in our mouth. And so it's important to educate ourselves, not to beat ourselves up or be hard on ourselves or try to change everything overnight. It's very much a step-by-step process where we have a lot of opportunity to practice compassion and gentleness with ourselves in the process. In the early 1900s, there was a dentist named Weston A. Price. And he noticed with his patients that some of them were very susceptible to cavities, and typically those people were more sick. And he was really curious about this, so he decided to travel around the planet to primitive cultures that had not yet been introduced to what he ended up calling the white man's diet. So these primitive cultures were still on their traditional diet. And what he found was that he dug up skulls and studied the people. And what he found was that they had very little disease, very few cavities. They didn't brush their teeth. He dug up these skulls. Their teeth were straight. They were healthy. They were not white, but they weren't falling out. They weren't full of cavities. But what he saw happen was as the white man's diet was introduced to these cultures, they began having cavities. They began having diseases like tuberculosis and all kinds of other diseases. And so what he realized was that when the processed foods were introduced to the diet, disease followed. And cavities came first. Cavities actually showed the health of the body or the degeneration that was happening in the body. In our culture, I believe it was in the 1920s, a man invented the electrocardiogram. This was before vegetable oils and processed foods had really become kind of the end all be all in our society, and there really was no need for an electrocardiogram. He actually couldn't sell it because heart disease was not something that doctors were really even dealing with, so they had no need for measuring the electricity in the heart. And at that point, what did people eat? They were eating lard and butter, bacon, all animal fat. They were eating the animal fat. They were not eating the processed carbohydrates and sugars. And what is interesting is as the processed foods and vegetable oils became much more common, heart disease followed, cancer followed, all of these diseases, stroke, diabetes, all of these diseases that we didn't used to see followed. So the good news is that we can reverse the disease process with the foods that we choose to put in our mouth. Basically, what are the good fats? The good fats that we want to be focusing on is good grass-fed butter. What in the world is that? it's better from cows that are grazing on grass instead of cooped up in a commercial farming center, I guess we would call it. I don't want to even call it a farm, but those cows produce, they're eating grains, they're not eating their natural diet, so the fat that they produce oftentimes is very toxic, and it's I want to say adulterated, it's damaged. So we don't want to be putting damaged fat in our body. There are two brands of butter that I use that you can find in the US. You can find it at Trader Joe's is Kerrygold butter, and another brand is Strauss butter, which I have seen at Whole Foods. I'm not sure where else, and I think it's more expensive. The Kerrygold I actually is being carried at Costco at this point. You'll notice a huge difference when you start using good butter. Butter is incredibly important. It's actually a medicinal food. It's not something that we need to limit. I'll talk a little bit about cholesterol in a minute, but it's incredibly healing for your digestive system. It helps to create the mucosal lining in our gut, which is incredibly important. It has butyric acid in it. It has the which is really good for the gut. It has the fat soluble vitamins A, D, E, and K. And what's so interesting to me is that we're also vitamin D deficient, and we also eat a low fat diet. And I think that that vitamin D deficiency has to do with not eating butter from grass fed cows. So the fat soluble vitamins have to be have to be accompanied by fat. And one of the jobs of those, the fat soluble vitamins, is that they help to drive minerals into our body, into our bones and our teeth. When I was on the raw food diet, I started getting cavities, and I was eating a healthy, a healthy raw food diet. I wasn't doing agave nectar and pre-made raw foods or anything like that. I was sprouting everything and eating all kinds of dark leafy greens, and I became very mineral deficient, and I actually started craving butter. Like, I thought I was gonna die if I didn't eat it. And when I started eating it, I literally was eating like a half a cup a day of butter. My kids were going nuts. They'd never seen anything like somebody eating so much butter. But I still probably eat 3 to 4 tablespoons of butter a day. It's not something that you have to limit. Your body will tell you. It's not like a food that you're gonna overeat if your body doesn't need it. But if you are deprived of that fat at first, your body is going to probably want a lot of it. It's great on vegetables. I don't usually just take a pat of butter and eat it, but every once in a while, if I'm in a hurry, I will. So basically, refined vegetables are really high in omega-6 fatty acids. And our diet is very high in omega-6 fatty acids and lower in the omega-3s. The omega-3s are anti-inflammatory. The omega-6s, when we get too many of them, are inflammatory. So guess what that causes? That causes inflammation, cardioinflammation, which is going to actually raise our cholesterol levels. What causes inflammation in the heart and in the body are the processed foods, the sugar, and the processed vegetable oils. The good oils are extra virgin olive oil, coconut oil, ghee, and butter. That's all we really want to use. Actually, unrefined flax oil is good. There's unrefined avocado oil. Trying to think what other oils I have in my refrigerator. Omega Nutrition is a great brand. You could trust all of their oils. Theirs are all unrefined. But getting back to the cardioinflammation, we have this whole epidemic of high cholesterol, and people are actually taking medication for the high cholesterol. But high cholesterol levels are actually a symptom of inflammation. High cholesterol is not the problem. High cholesterol is a symptom. So when we eat a diet that helps to reduce inflammation, our cholesterol will naturally come down. Eating foods that have cholesterol doesn't cause high cholesterol. What causes high cholesterol is inflammation in the body. When there's inflammation, the body automatically starts producing more cells to go to the rescue to heal the body. And guess what 50% of the cell membrane is made of? Cholesterol. So when we have inflammation and the body's got to produce more cells to go fight the inflammation, our body naturally needs more cholesterol to produce those cells to fight the inflammation. And so we don't actually want to lower our cholesterol because when the cholesterol is serving an actual purpose in the healing process in our body. What we really want to do is ask ourselves, what am I doing to cause my body to produce high levels of cholesterol? So to have a healthy heart, what do we need to do? We want to sleep. We want to get our sleep. Do what we can do to reduce our stress. Get processed sugar, refined sugar, processed foods, and trans fats. Those have to go. They cause inflammation. They cause so many problems in our body. And I know that's a process. I'm not saying go throw it all away right now or anything like that. These are just things to think about and to strive towards would be a much better way to do that. But in my opinion, high cholesterol doesn't need to be dealt with. And I'm not a doctor, so don't go off your cholesterol medication. You need to talk all of this over with your doctor. I'm not even a nutritionist. I'm a researcher and a nutrition expert and a certified holistic lifestyle coach, but I'm not actually prescribing anything. But I'm basically saying that it's the inflammation in your body that needs to be dealt with. And that can only happen when we change our diet and practice the six principles of health. Cholesterol is actually necessary for healing. And when there's inflammation in the body, the body's going to produce the cholesterol. So we want to look at what the actual underlying problem is rather than treating the symptom. Raw coconut oil is a great thing to add to your diet. It's really good for brain health. Excuse me. That pollen is getting me, and I'm sitting outside because I have good reception out here. But the coconut oil is really healthy for the brain, and they're actually doing some studies that coconut oil is really good for Alzheimer's. It has lauric acid in it, which is amazingly healing for the gut. It's actually antiviral, antibacterial. It's the fat in the coconut ends up being used as energy in our body. It actually helps our body rid itself of fat. So the interesting thing is that people are overweight and they go on a low-fat diet, they start eating more grains, and it's actually the carbs that are causing more of the body to gain weight. When we eat enough good fat, we are satiated, we're satisfied, we crave sugar less. Our body is happier. It's actually more hydrated because we actually get hydrated by eating good fats. And then our body, it helps to balance our hormones. I mean, good fat does so many important things for our body. And when our hormones get balanced, our body and our stress is released, our body will start releasing fat. And I can tell you, like, your body is not going to overeat good fats. You might be eating a lot of it at first when you first start eating healthy fats, but that's okay. You may gain some weight if you're really eating a lot of fats at first. And I did. I gained about 12 pounds when I first changed my diet. But I had to remineralize my body. I had to renourish my body really and get rid of all the deficiencies. And then I stopped ever wanting to overeat. I just didn't. My body got so balanced out that it just kind of tells me what I want to eat or what it wants to eat and when. Okay. I'm just going to touch. I'm seeing that I only have about 10 minutes left. So I want to talk a bit about what, if you really did want to go on a healing diet, what would be the first, most important, biggest priority? The biggest priority is to heal your digestion, heal your gut. If your gut is inflamed or wounded, you're not going to be able to break down and digest the foods that you're eating. So you could eat all the most amazing healthy foods in the world, and not be able to actually absorb all of that. So we really need to heal our gut. Basically, 80% of our immune system is in the gut, in our digestive tract. So if our gut is not working properly, our immune system is very much affected and we are not going to be able to fight disease. So we always want to start there. There's a few things that we can do. What happens in our gut is there's all kinds of bacteria, parasites, fungus, yeasts, and that's normal. But what happens is we're supposed to have about 85% healthy microflora bacteria in the gut and 15% of the fungus, parasites, yeast, bad bacteria, all of that. And the good bacteria can keep it all in check. But what most of us have is 85% of the unhealthy bacteria and 15% of the good bacteria. And our body just simply can't function at a healthy level when this is going on. So we have to correct that first. We can do that by taking probiotics. I actually offer a 7-month gut recolonization program that's incredible and really inexpensive. It's like, I believe it's about $24 a month. So it's really inexpensive to do. You can eat probiotic-rich foods like raw sauerkraut, raw kimchi, raw cortito, which you can get at a health food store, Whole Foods, that kind of thing. You can make your own. You can go to a website called The Body Ecology Diet and get directions. You can look up, also, you could Google wild fermentation, and you can just go to a YouTube video. The guy's name is Sandor Katz. And he just shows you how to do make your own fermented vegetables with good salt. So it's a really, really inexpensive way to add amazing health to your body. Another great thing is to get Bragg's apple cider vinegar. That has lots of good healthy bacteria. There's all kinds of things you can do to add healthy bacteria to your diet. It is essential for good health. That and eating the good fats and getting the processed carbohydrates and sugar out of your diet, if you just did that, you would absolutely transform your health. So those are some things that you can do for healing your gut. The other thing is probably the most healing food, and Weston Price found this when he was studying the primitive cultures, is something called bone broth, and you can get a recipe for that. It's very inexpensive to make. You can get that on my website, mariaripa.com, on my blog, and start making bone broth and adding beef gelatin to your diet. And the other food to add is fresh aloe. You can just go to an Asian market, get a big stock of aloe, cut off a 1-inch piece, peel off the leaf, the skin of the leaf. So you kind of fillet it. Inside is this gel, and the gel is so incredibly healing for your entire body, your immune system. It's antiviral, antibacterial, anti-cancer. And I just put a chunk of that in a smoothie. You can even just make throw some cucumber, lemon, and ginger in a blender with some aloe. Maybe a little green apple, and just make a nice little smoothie and drink that every morning, and you will do so much to heal your body. So hopefully I've given you some just simple things to think about, maybe start implementing over the next year. It doesn't have to be anything that you need to do overnight. In fact, that can be really overwhelming. And I know a lot of what I've given you guys so much to chew on. And so I am going to open up the line. I think I know how to do that. And just open up for any questions that you guys might have. And nothing is off limits. I'll do my best to answer. So I'm going to open up the line, and I'm not sure how to have you raise your hands and stuff. I'm just going to open it up, and whoever speaks first gets to ask first. Hope you guys enjoyed this.
Yes,
All right, you guys are unmuted, so you might want to mute your own phone. Otherwise, we're going to have a lot of background noise. I believe you can also press *6 to mute yourself, but I'm not 100% sure. So maybe you can just mute your own phone. All right. So does anybody have a question that I might or might not be able to answer? You can just go ahead and speak up if you have a question. Hey, Leslie, how are you? Uh-oh. Are you there?
Hi, Maria.
Oh, hi.
Yeah.
Hi.
Just that there's so much information to digest.
I know.
You know, I have kind of thought a little bit of before about, you know, when Brittany sent out the message that you were going to be doing, like really thinking a little bit about the food, because we've done so much work around the emotional eating, and I think that you're right. You know, if you don't eat at night, that's an opportunity to do that. And I feel like I've cleared so much of that, yet my weight is still stuck. So I know it has to do with the food. And I guess this is the dilemma. And Brittany has suggested, like, look, you got to speak to someone like Maria about this. But I think it's something that I've heard other people talk about. It's like the dilemma of diet, no diet. Because what I've been hearing, not only from Brittany, but from several people for the last few months, I'm a chronic dieter, is don't diet.
Yeah.
You know, I translate that in my brain as don't diet.
Yeah. You know,
You know what I mean by that?
I totally do. I know.
It means to me, don't restrict anything.
Okay, so here's...
And that doesn't work either.
No, it doesn't. And basically, I'll tell you what I did was... When I started really changing my diet after the raw, so the raw food diet was so restrictive, so I could stay really thin because I so restricted my diet. But when I opened myself up back to eating everything, I did gain 12 pounds and or 12 to 14 pounds. And I would say I had it on me for like a year and a half because I was such an emotional eater and I had to spend a lot of time, doing the emotional healing part while I just sort of kept stuffing myself. You know, it was part of my process. And what I did, though, was I started eating, I ate healthy versions of whatever I wanted. So I did it that way, but I worked really hard on the, what I see. Basically, my principle is more definitely you can't diet because, especially if you're an emotional eater, it's not going to work. First of all, I do a lot of educating myself, even still, on what the food that I eat, how it's affecting my body, because then I'm not focusing on weight loss. If I focus on weight loss, I'll gain weight. So I can't do that. So what I teach people is the principle of adding in. So instead of saying, I'm not going to eat this and I'm not going to eat this and I'm not going to eat this, saying, you know what, I'm going to start by adding bone broth into my life or adding, you know, a green juice or a green smoothie into my day. And I'm just going to make a priority. I can have whatever I want, but I'm going to add a green smoothie in. And slowly adding more and more of the healthy stuff in, eventually got me not wanting the other stuff. Like I was eating a lot of sourdough bread with butter and, you know, stuff like that, that was really packing on weight. And then I just really started feeling like I can't be fully who I am if I keep stuffing myself with this food, and I more wanted to be fully who I am. You know what I mean? Like it was blocking out who I was. And So as my priorities started changing for, why I was wanting to eat healthy, and I completely got rid of the scale. I mean, I cannot focus on weight loss. I will gain weight every single time, even now, even still. I haven't like gotten over that. So I don't know, is that helpful to think about adding in rather than taking out? Have you
It
tried
is,
that?
and I mean, that was actually a suggestion that was made to me by two other, like, Brittany and another weight loss, not weight loss, but emotional eating coaches, like, stop it, because I just don't understand. I mean, if you're a chronic dieter, you don't understand what that means. So they said, just start adding in instead of subtracting, right? And I've been doing that. Of course, the fear is, and I tap on that a lot with my buddy, is, right. Now I'm going to add in. I'm definitely going to get fat. And yes, that's probably the problem. And I know that in being an EFT coach with clients, the more you focus on the problem, the bigger the problem gets.
Right.
So it's getting my eyes off the focus of the weight, which I did for months while we were working together, but I
Yeah.
guess you just want to see it happen.
Okay,
It's like,
so.
okay, it's like I want to see this.
Oh. Oh God, I so know. Especially when you're working with people and it's on emotional eating. I know, I so have been there and I really get that whole internal war going on and it sucks. And the thing that I work on a lot with my clients is and I'm sure that you're doing this. Maybe you're not doing it exactly this way, so I'll say this is how I do it, is really recognizing that there is a part of you that is trying to take care of you by telling you that food will make it all better. And so it's honoring that part of you that thinks that it is taking care of you. And I will tell you, I think it took me thousands of times of doing that before it finally started actually, before transformation, like real change started happening. So what I would say is the journey is doing it again and again and again and again until that part of you stops trying to take care of you that way, but it's really a part of you trying to nurture yourself.
Right. And I'm beginning to try and get compassion for that part of myself. I'm doing a lot of tapping on them. I kind of ticked off at that one, bud.
Yeah.
So,
You know.
I'm working on that piece, but adding, so
Okay.
you do suggest the adding, and
For
would you
sure.
start with like a green drink, or would you start with the bone broth?
Oh, that's a good question. If there's any, you know what I do? I make like I bake every week. I bake two chickens one night, for dinner. Are you a vegetarian? No. Okay. I remember somebody is. So I'll bake two chickens for the family, and then I'll just take the carcasses and the organ meats and throw them in a pot, and let them simmer for 12 to 24 hours, add some vegetables in, and just make a nice broth. And then I'll take that broth and freeze it so I don't have to keep making it. I like to do a big pot. And then if you could just take some of that out every time you run out and have like a cup of it in the morning or before you go to bed, especially if you're a night eater. Oh God, it's so comforting. Like add some salt in there and just have a nice hot cup of broth. It
So
becomes
just
a
broth, okay.
real comfort. And then if you could also do a green smoothie during the day or just switch off once you're used to the broth, then add in a smoothie, either one, whichever one maybe sounds more inviting to you. Like just if you sit with yourself for a couple minutes and just go, which one do I really know that I would do and that I would like? I wouldn't feel like I was, having to do it, kind of a thing.
I think that it would depend on the season, so.
Yeah, I know. It's getting warmer now, so the smoothie might
Yeah,
actually
the
be more
broth is warming,
appealing.
but yeah, I love broth, so either way. another one.
Okay.
And I have one more question, and it's about what are your feelings on wheatgrass?
On what?
Wheatgrass.
Oh gosh, I kind of have mixed emotions about wheatgrass. I got sick on wheatgrass once when I first got into health 25 years ago, and I've never been able to do it since. And since then, I've heard that if you buy like a flat of wheatgrass, it can actually be moldy. It can be susceptible to mold or something. I know a lot of people who have gotten really healthy on wheatgrass. So if it's something that you do and you feel really like you, if it's good for your body, you're going to feel clarity of mind and energized from it pretty much right away after you drink it. Within, you know, 15, 20 minutes, you'll just go, wow, I feel so good. And if that's you, then I would say it's probably good for you. For some reason, Donna Gates, who I've done a lot of my gut healing studying with, I'm not exactly sure why she says it, except for I know that she says the flats of wheatgrass can be moldy. So if you're not growing it in the ground, you have to be careful. But she steers people away from it. So that's the only reason that I even would have a question about it. But I would see how your body does on it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, those are great questions. Thanks for asking.
Thanks.
Bye. All right, the line is open, so if anybody else has a question, now's a great time. And if not, if you could just mute your phone, that would be great. I am getting some background noise.
This is Marge.
Hi, Marge.
I have a question about the bone broth. I do have the recipe, and I'm really interested in making it. But I noticed that, you know, you have to boil it so long and everything, and I just wonder if it's possible to make it in a slow cooker.
Yes. Oh, I'm so glad that you asked that, because you know, for some reason, I don't get mine out, but that is a really great way to make the broth and just leave it, set it, and forget it kind of a thing. If you're going off to work or you don't want to leave the stove on at night, yes, absolutely use a slow cooker. Actually, that's probably a better way to do it, and I should add that into my instructions. Yeah, definitely.
Well, I'm going to try it then. I'm really interested in trying it. It sounds like it's really nutritious and good, and I'm sort of like yourself. I've been adding foods, and I've tried the green smoothie and, you know, just in general, just getting good things, you know, and I'm gradually getting away from the processed stuff. It's slow, but sure, it's happening, and I'm losing weight. Well, I just lost all the weight I needed to, so I'm happy about that, and I'm
maintaining my health. Good for you. That's so exciting. I'm glad you shared that, because it really, you know, it encourages everybody else. So good. Yay. Yeah. And I love that you said you're adding in and that you're doing it step by step and just taking it slow. And it just, that's the only way to do it permanently, I'm convinced. Very few people can drastically change their diet overnight and stick to it forever. I have known a few people that have done it, but very, very rare. Very rare that anyone can do that. So good job.
Well, thanks very much for your recipes, and I mean, I have everything, so I'm trying it all bit by bit. So
great.
We'll keep everything in good health.
Yes. Good job. Thanks. All right. Anybody else? Also, I just want to remind you guys, one thing I was going to say about the broth, I think I forgot, but Weston Price had found that broth can bring a dead man back to life. That's what he says about broth, about how healing it is. And I think the main reason is that it's so full of minerals, which are absolutely essential to health and hydration. It's very hydrating. Which is the reason that I really think that hydration is the underlying key to good health. If we're dehydrated, if our cells are dehydrated, they can't push the toxins out. Our body can't push the disease out. So anyway, and then I was just going to say again, you are welcome to email me if you have any other questions. My email is maria@thegreensmoothiechallenge.com. And I'll just hang on the line for a little bit longer if anybody else has questions. Hello? All right. Well, I am going to assume that means that your questions, you either don't have them right now or they're answered, or you'd rather ask them via email. So I thank you guys so much for being on the call today. Thanks for your awesome questions, Leslie and Marge. And I will talk to you guys later, hopefully. Have a great day.